to other states, and they're getting to work on the federal level, too. In June, Representatives Cori Bush and Bonnie Watson Coleman introduced a bill in the House called the Drug Policy Reform Act, which, if passed, would eliminate criminal penalties for drug possession at the federal level.
Thanks to Cecilia Brown and the 70 Million team. You've been listening to 70 Million, when a state treats drug addiction like a health issue on Making Contact. If you've enjoyed this episode, please write and review us twice on Apple Podcasts, and then please share with your friends and family via Facebook and on Instagram. We're Making Contact Project, and on Twitter, we're Making_contact. To learn more about us and access other episodes for free, visit us at radioproject.org. The Making Contact team includes Jessica Partnow, Monica Lopez, Salima Hamirani, Sabine Blazin, and I'm Anita Johnson. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.
You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Here goes nothing.
Tune in to KBOO for Drinking from Puddles, hosted by Brandon, every other Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. That's Drinking for Puddles every other Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Yeah.
Welcome to Labor Radio on KBOO Portland. I am Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Elliot Gilland.
Thank you so much for joining us. Before we get started, I want to let you, our listeners, know that KBOO is in the middle of our spring membership fundraising drive. Don't forget that KBOO is commercial-free, volunteer-powered radio, which is made possible by people, by amazing people like you. In fact, 80% of the station's funding comes from the generosity of our members. So if you can, please help us reach our fundraising goal by going to kboo.fm/give or by texting KBOO to 44321. We here at Labor Radio thank you so much for your support. And also, before we jump into the show, we would like to give a special thanks and shout out to the Labor Radio Podcast Network for hosting podcasted versions of our show each month. Be sure to check them out at laborradionetwork.org. And now on to the actual topic that we'll be discussing today. There has been a historic victory that I'm sure at this point you've heard about in the labor organizing realm. Earlier this month, Amazon workers at the JFK 8 Fulfillment Center in Staten Island, New York, stunned the nation by becoming the first Amazon location to successfully unionize. The union beat the company in a vote of 2,654 votes to just 2,131 votes in a National Labor Relations Board election that took place on the 1st of April this month. Of course, unsurprisingly, Amazon immediately released a statement saying that they're going to consider filing an objection to the vote, alleging that there was interference by the NLRB, although they did not specify what exactly that interference was. But this is a pretty amazing, you know, this is a historic victory. They are the first work group at any Amazon facility anywhere in the world to organize, to unionize. And of course, this has been something that people have been trying to do for a long time. And, you know, it's kind of the white whale of the labor organizing community in this country. So a huge victory across the board on all fronts there. And it seems, you know, I actually, in researching this story, I found that the slogan, the Amazon's corporate slogan, is "Work hard, have fun, and make history." So it's pretty great that, you know, these workers seem to have taken that really to heart in order to, you know, win this vote and actually make history there. So that's great. The victory itself came as a shock to many because, you know, unlike the 2020 union drive that took place in Bessemer, Alabama, that we of course discussed a lot on this show, This one was undertaken by an independent union that was not affiliated with any established national union, and it was operating on an absolute shoestring budget. So, you know, with a budget of just $120,000, the Amazon Labor Union managed to defeat the $1.5 trillion behemoth Amazon, which spent an amazing $4.3 million on the anti-union consultants who came in to basically shut down the efforts to unionize in Staten Island. And that was just in 1 year, in 2021 alone. So that means, you know, over the course of the time that people have been trying to organize that facility, you know, it was many, many millions of dollars, if not tens of millions of dollars that they spent trying to keep that from happening.
Yeah, and I think it's important to call out too that, like, for every dollar spent on pro-union versus every dollar spent on anti-union, you know, they're not really equal. Because, you know, the environment that someone is spending, you know, Amazon controls the environment in which they spend money.
Right.
So, you know, not everything costs money, like changes to processes or getting people to come to meetings, right? This is stuff that doesn't cost any money, whereas on the pro-union side, it does,
yeah.
Right? To try to get people to do things extracurricularly outside of work to kind of move stuff forward. So when you consider that as well, I mean, it's not only this gigantic numerical difference, but also how far your dollar goes is super different.
Right. And, you know, yeah, so like you're saying, it's not just them spending money on...
policy.
Yeah. But they're also bringing in, like, consultants, outside lawyers and you know, PR folks, which is an incredible thing for a company of their size and, you know, of their scope to then have to go and outsource to bring in consultants just to figure out how to bust the union rather than... And all the money they're spending on could just be spent to, like, pay people more and... You know, keep the workers a little bit happier so they maybe wouldn't feel the need to do
this. Oh, yeah. And I'm sure, you know, there's money in that. That $4.3 million is just to the consultants, like you're saying.
Exactly.
So, I mean, some of it's going to just standard corporate people who are getting paid, you know, FTE, full-time salary. So
exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, on top of all that, like adding to this David versus Goliath overtones that this story has, the Amazon Labor Union's president, Chris Smalls, who is a 33-year-old former rapper, has been fired. He had been fired from the company after leading a small walkout, which was calling for better workplace protections against the coronavirus in 2020. And so he was actively trying to organize the facility, you know, when he was an employee there. And then once he was fired, he really put all of his time and effort into trying to get his former coworkers to help him organize and to form the union there. So you know. Like, in fact, actually, according to a leaked memo that was reported on by Vice News, Amazon executives denigrated Smalls, you know, who is a black man, and they referred to him as being not smart or articulate during a meeting with the then CEO, Jeff Bezos, the, you know, one of the three richest men in the world. So, yeah, like, they clearly showed immediately what they thought of this guy. And, you know, so that is further leads to the sort of David versus Goliath narrative that is sure to play out. As you know, as the media coverage of this expands, the company, you know, Amazon itself, they even went so far as to have Chris Smalls and several other ALU, Amazon Labor Union organizers, arrested for trespassing after they were there on, you know, outside the facility, passing out free lunches to workers on their break. In fact, one of the people who was arrested with him said, we were just giving out free grilled chicken and pasta to all the workers in the break room. And of course, so once they did that, they were there trying to build goodwill and, you know, spread the word. And Amazon made a big scene of having them arrested as soon as they were, you know, outside of the break room once they walked away from that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, there's a lot of different grievances that the union was bringing up to you know, argue for why they needed a union. Obviously, pay is one of the big things and benefits and all that stuff. But, you know, on top of all that, safety issues were a big concern for them and have really been one of the keystone arguments for all the groups who were trying to organize Amazon facilities around the country. It's not just at the Staten Island facility, but in Bessemer, Alabama, that's the same thing that workers cited there as well. And these safety issues have been a perennial concern for Amazon workers, you know, in facilities around the country and around the world. And, you know, we've talked about this extensively on this show, but last December, you know, a few months ago, a tornado killed 6 Amazon employees in a warehouse facility in Edwardsville, Illinois. You know, just to highlight some of the unsafe conditions there. The, you know, those workers were told to stay at work. They weren't allowed to leave once the tornado warnings came into effect. And they, you know, so they were crushed in this like an Amazon warehouse is full of giant stacking yeah. shelves and big machinery, and it's not a safe place to be if the winds start whipping things around. And so obviously, you know, that was a pretty bad instance, you know, one of the more horrific instances that happened. But that event also led many employees at that facility and around the country to speak out about how they had received virtually no emergency training from the company. And so, you know, that is no doubt one of the things that organizers can point to when they are trying to convince, you know, their fellow workers why it is that they need a union.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, on top of that, some of the tactics that the Amazon labor union used to win this victory were actually pretty amazing. In an interview with In These Times magazine, some of the workers at the Staten Island facility explained that once the Amazon labor union filed their petition to form a union, the company started holding captive audience meetings to spew anti-union info intended to dissuade the workers from voting in favor of the union. Now, of course, captive audience meetings are something that, you know, we have discussed in this show before, and if you're aware of what the PRO Act, the Protecting the Right to Organize Act, that has been stalled in Congress for, you know, a year plus at this point, that's actually one of the main plank points for that piece of legislation would be to make captive audience meetings illegal. You know, that a company essentially could not force workers into a meeting run by them or by their union-busting consultants that is explicitly designed to put fear into them about what a union might do and provide misinformation about it. You know, they cannot be compelled to go to that meeting. Now, of course, that is still legal now, but if the PRO Act were to be passed, that is something that would be immediately made illegal. But yeah, it's no surprise that Amazon jumped on the ability to hold these captive audience meetings. And so these meetings, they would hold these meetings for 30 minutes or sometimes up to an hour every single day. And they would, you know, they would require all of their workers at the facility to attend at least one meeting per week. So that, you know, obviously there's the benefits to it. You know, if you're someone who's working in a warehouse facility and you're on your feet all day, this is a 30 minute to an hour period where you do get to go sit down. But, you know, the compulsory nature of it is probably immediately off-putting for the workers. And then, of course, what is being told to you in those meetings is you know, further off-putting.
You know, it tells you a couple different things about Amazon's kind of state of mind, or you replace Amazon with any large company,
right?
Who's, you know, trying not to allow unions to be formed. You know, it's kind of tells you two things. One, that a company like this, where productivity literally is everything, right? And, you know, the people at the top of the organization are all logistics people. You know, the fact that they're willing to give this time to it kind of tells you how scared they are of, like, oh my gosh, if we have to pay these people some sort of livable wage, then our business model, it kind of starts to crumble, right? The math just stops working. And so that tells you everything you need to know there. And then, you know, on top of that, right, it also shows that these tactics really work, right? Like, these consultants have been using them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think a lot of times, you know, you'll be talking to some folks that, you know, maybe haven't heard of these before, but, you know, they go, oh, a captive audience meeting, whatever, I just won't believe it.
Right.
But I mean, if you're not familiar with this, and you're going in and, like, people who, you know, are at the company who you've met before are telling you to believe in these meetings, and, you know, people that you've worked with a long time or maybe even a short amount of time but have helped you while you've been there are all kind of saying the stuff. I mean, it's pretty easy to kind of believe some of these things. And, you know, I think these tactics are really powerful, and I think it kind of goes on to show kind of what a crazy achievement this is, though obviously it's not over yet, and, you know, we'll get into that later. But
yeah, no, that's a great point. Of course, you know, yeah, like, there. Because let's be honest, like, the IQ, the public IQ about what unions are and sort of the value of them, I mean, it's pretty low in this country, and that is intentionally been the case for at least the last 40 plus years. And a lot of the portrayal of unions in media are about, you know, like, looking at corruption and, you know, folks like Jimmy Hoffa and stuff like that and the mob. And so there's less of a basic understanding of, like, why a union might be valuable. And so if you go, you know, even if you were someone who thinks, like, well, I can go into this and resist the information, if you know, if that's the case, if you know what a union is,
well, a lot of people aren't going in thinking that.
Right.
It's just, oh, I'm hearing two sides to this thing, right?
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, a lot of these consultants, you know, they're being hired by firms everywhere, and so they've done a lot of, like, you know, not only focus testing, but, you know, they understand what their messaging is. you know, and you know, a couple years ago on the show, we talked about Delta Airlines and kind of some of their anti-union stuff. Right. And they had silly signs like, hey, you know, union dues are an Xbox, right?
Yeah.
You know, your yearly union dues are an Xbox. And I think a lot of people, it blew up on social media and people were laughing about how silly of a message that is. But if you're not going in there as like a pro-labor person, you're just trying to make ends meet, you're like, yeah, you know, that is an Xbox, right? Like,
yeah.
The way you're framing the discussion isn't, I will never be able to grow. Because I think a lot of people's minds, you know, I'm not going to do this forever, right? The whole mindset of, I think, America is, you know, and it's the same way with like the way we vote against our interest for taxes, right?
Yeah.
It's, no, I'm going to be rich someday. Why would I want to tax them?
Right.
And I think that fits in here too, which is the mental mindset of people. So, you know, all of these tactics have been tested and proven to work. And, you know, even something as silly as, you know, hey, your union dues for the whole year are an Xbox. That stuff works, or otherwise they wouldn't do it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And if you go into the meeting with that as your mindset, or just having no concept of what it is that you're being presented, and then your boss, or, you know, someone who is endorsed by your boss, is telling you all the reasons why you shouldn't support the union. I mean, like, yeah, if you're a worker who may be temporary or part-time or looking to just sort of, you know, stay there and move up, those are all very scary elements, and that would work to persuade a lot of people.
And, you know, obviously in this case, we're talking about Staten Island, which, you know, is a part of New York, and New York is blue, but, you know, you never know, kind of depending on local kind of breakdowns and stuff. But, you know, a lot of where this is happening is, you know, they are red states that aren't pro-labor, even the people who are, you know, doing the labor. So,
yeah,
you know, especially if you're in a state where you kind of lean a certain way, then a lot of times it can work pretty well.
Yeah, kind of like Alabama and Bessemer, that facility there.
And the vote was close, you know. We talk about it being a victory, but it was not a blowout.
No, not at all.
And yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, all of that is very true. And, you know, so with all that stacked against them, it's pretty amazing that, you know, the organizers were able to actually go in and turn the tables on the company and use their sort of union-busting tactics against them in a lot of ways. You know, so just by holding these captive audience meetings, it actually had the counter effect of raising the employees' awareness of the fact that there was a unionizing effort happening in that facility. Like, not all, you know, there's sometimes like thousands of people working in one of these facilities, and there's different shifts. So, you know, the people who are aware of the union might not be able to talk to every single other employee. But once the company starts having these secretive, like these very cagey meetings about, you know, this other coming in, that actually makes people, you know, makes them question like what's going on and try and find out more about it. And so, you know, during the meetings, the company actually, like the Amazon representatives or the union busters, they didn't want to use the word union for fear of planting any seeds in people's heads about a union. So instead, they kept referring to, you know, a quote, a third party that was trying to come in just to get signatures and to take the workers' money. But, you know, workers in attendance in those meetings report that, like, or it was reported that workers in those meetings who were involved in the organizing effort would then speak up and push back, explaining that they weren't some nefarious third party, but rather they were just their coworkers, their fellow workers there, you know, trying to get better conditions for everyone. And so that, of course, led a lot of the uninitiated workers in attendance to seek them out afterwards and ask questions about the union. So it actually really led to like a raising of awareness among the general working population there about like what was happening, you know, what they were trying to do. And so the organizers recognized this reality, and in these one-on-one conversations they'd have with people after these meetings, the organizers would then push the idea with them that the company should allow them to hold workplace meetings too, you know, to share their side of the story. And so, you know, as of course is the, you know, what's going to happen, eventually the union busters running the meetings began barring the organizers from attending them and would kick them out if they, you know, tried to push back at all. You know, because there were people that they recognized, like, well, that's an organizer with ALU, and so they wouldn't let him come into the meetings. But that, of course, had the unintended effect as well of leading the, you know, non-affiliated workers to raise their hands and say things like, you know, why won't you let someone from the union speak up about what's going on? Like, why don't you let them tell their side too? And so it really did kind of backfire on the company in a lot of ways, you know. And there were reports of incidents where, you know, organizers with ALU would attempt to enter these meetings, and the union buster would be there preventing them from walking in, saying like, well, you know, you don't belong here. And the workers would be like, well, what is your badge number? Like, who are you? Like, I'm an employee here. So here's my badge. Like, who are you? You're not supposed to be in this facility. You know, you're not supposed to be in the premises unless you are a badged employee. And so there was just, they used those meetings and the general anti, you know, union busting tactics to actually, you know, turn the tables in the company, which is really an amazing feat. And, you know, it's ingenious, and it's also something that can be fully replicated at all these other facilities around the country.
Yeah.
You know, on top of that, organizers also printed up flyers explaining what union busting was and what tactics the Amazon was using. And in fact, after the NYPD made a big scene of arresting Chris Smalls back in February, because, you know, when the Amazon basically had him arrested for delivering free lunches to his coworker or his former coworkers, organizers used that opportunity to pass out those explainer flyers and to highlight the lengths that Amazon would go to bust the union effort. And so that really did kind of turn a lot of the workers against them, reportedly. Now, just quickly before we continue with this, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Labor Radio here on listener-supported KBOO Community Radio. We'll be right back with our discussion about this incredible Amazon union victory that just took place. I want to take a quick moment here to provide a reminder to our listeners to please donate to the KBOO Spring Membership Drive right now. Please help us try and reach our $56,000 fundraising goal by donating today. You can go to kboo.fm/give. Or if you're using the KBOO mobile app, just click on the donate button right there. And we thank you so much for supporting community-powered radio. So now let's get back to this discussion. Obviously, you know, this is a huge victory and, you know, it can spark a lot of great things moving forward. But, you know, as we mentioned, Amazon has said that they are likely going to challenge the results of this election. And, you know, that is probably going to take, you know, the course of a few months, a few years.
Yeah.
So this is far from over, and it is a victory, but it is a victory that may be fleeting, you know, to a certain degree.
Yeah, right. And I think that not only is this a fight that has to continue locally kind of in Staten Island, but it's a fight that will continue to expand. You know, we've talked about a long time around, you know, the federal government kind of having to play a role in this, you know, and the consultants aren't going to want, you know, these anti-union consultants aren't going to want to have a record that's a losing record, right? So,
right.
You know, if this is allowed to escalate, you know, I think this is an arms race between kind of union and anti-union folks. And the tactics are going to change and get more uncomfortable, right?
I think
they've stagnated to these kind of things that we've talked about, you know, all the time, right? Like kind of challenging votes, you know, all these kind of forced mandatory meetings. But who knows, you know, if the tides start turning, kind of what could happen if the government doesn't really step in?
And yeah, on top of that, like, you know, we're seeing it across the board right now that, you know, obviously over the pandemic period, there was kind of a massive awakening of the working, you know, class in this country, the labor movement, and people recognize, you know, what really it is to be an essential worker and what jobs are essential and what aren't. And, you know, and there was a lot of benefits provided to working people during this time that we can see are systematically being clawed back right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, the trend is absolutely going to be this post-pandemic austerity imposed by, you know, corporate America, by employers, and to a degree by our government as well. And so the gains that were, you know, the gains that were gained by the working class and labor movement over the last 2 years or so are likely not going to sustain, barring some sort of massive, you know, intervention,
yeah,
likely on the part of the government. And, you know, of course, we have in our president right now someone who claims to be the most pro-worker, like worker-friendly president we ever had in this country. You know, that's at least the rhetoric that was part of the campaign. And he has, you know, Joe Biden has said a lot of great things. You know, when the Bessemer vote happened, he came out in support of the workers there. He has made statements in support of the workers in Staten Island. But he has not done as all, you know, he has not matched that rhetoric with action,
yeah,
necessarily.
Yeah.
You know, he has staffed up the NLRB with folks who are a little bit more pro-labor, but still, you know, what would really help would be to push the Democratic-controlled Senate at the moment to pass the PRO Act,
yeah,
you know, the Protecting the Right to Organize Act.
Well, and you know, I think the other thing that's just affecting this so deeply is the stock market itself, right? The gains realized by so many of these tech companies are on astronomical levels that we've never seen before. And it's mostly because they are you know, creating products that have such low overhead after like the initial R&D phases, right?
Yeah.
Similar to like pharmacies and things like this. So, you know, we have so many logistics-based actually like producing companies like an Amazon. Obviously, they have huge technical wings as well, which makes this more frustrating.
Yeah.
But, you know, we have a lot of these larger companies who sell real physical goods who are being asked to deliver results that are much harder when your overhead and your business model looks completely different, right? Because, you know, people go, oh, well, I want to be a growth stock like, you know, Meta, right? Or Facebook or whatever it is. So, you know, I think fundamentally there's just a disconnect between how we're treating people and then the profits that are looking to be realized by publicly traded companies like Amazon. And obviously, you know, they have, you know, Amazon Web Services. They have all these different
tech things as well, but
when you're in the game of shipping and producing real physical goods, if you don't take advantage of the worker, there's no way to realize those types of gains and profits. It's just not physically possible.
Yeah, the logistics game like that. I mean, the interesting thing too is that, you know, there are a lot of the tech companies that, you know, or, you know, a lot of companies that do sort of online work that
they all have the best. They treat their workers the best because they don't, you know, they don't have the same types of kind of requirements on their profits, right?
Yeah. But a lot of these companies are able to
margins,
do things.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Like they, you know, they basically actually have, they have cushier packages for their workers that way, that keeps them from unionizing. But, you know, or a company like Amazon cannot do the thing that a lot of other companies do, which is like, well, we just threatened, you're going to unionize. Well, we're just going to close this and move. Because a company like Amazon has to, based on their business model, has to exist everywhere.
Local,
yeah. They have to be everywhere. They have to be in every city, every community. And so that does make them slightly vulnerable to you know, organizing communities around the country to fight back against them in their workplaces like that. But of course, you know, with the amount of money they spend and sort of the precarity of the jobs they provide, it makes it very difficult to keep enough worker momentum in the right direction across the board. So it'll be really interesting to see how this does play out. You know, whether Amazon does challenge the NLRB vote. And you know, of course, on top of that, what happens to the revote that took place in Bessemer, Alabama, and sort of how that plays out, you know, and what other facility pops up to push a unionization drive around the country somewhere else.
Yeah. Regardless of what happens, it's not over.
Right.
So
yeah, regardless of whether it gets overturned, this is a major step in the right direction, which is great. But yeah, it is very tenuous, and so as Elliot said, stay tuned, and we will be sure to keep covering this as we move forward. But yeah, I mean, so obviously Amazon itself has been preparing for the reality that workers are going to try and organize in their facilities probably since their inception, or at least, you know, the last few years as the labor movement has gained momentum. And so one of the things that they are attempting to sort of do to counteract that is in a recent article for The Intercept, reporter Ken Klippenstein revealed that back in November of 2021, Amazon convened a high-level meeting in which top executives discussed plans to create an internal social media program that would let employees recognize coworkers' performance with posts called shoutouts. You know, so ostensibly it is just sort of a gold star app kind of thing, you know, to give posts to each other. But according to Amazon's head of worldwide consumer business, Dave Clark, the major goal of the program would be to reduce employee attrition by fostering happiness among workers and also productivity. Shoutouts would be gamified, you know, and rewards would come from them. But you know, the company itself was concerned with what they call the dark side of social media, and so the company officials have decided that it would be necessary to actively monitor posts in order to ensure positive community engagement. And to that end, the app would contain what they refer to as an auto bad word monitor that would flag employees' posts containing profane or inappropriate language. But on top of that, it would also, you know, in addition to profanities, it would also monitor and flag keywords pertaining to labor unions, as well as block a variety of terms that could represent potential critiques of Amazon's working conditions. So the list that has been provided is, or what that was leaked is pretty extensive and kind of insane. The list includes such banned words. It includes these, but it's not limited to the following words: slave and slave labor, master, prison, plantation, freedom, diversity, injustice, fairness and unfair, union, grievance, pay raise and living wage, compensation, ethics, It also includes the phrase, "This is concerning." And on top of all that, it also includes the word restrooms, which presumably is related to the many reports that Amazon employees have, you know, been kept to such intense productivity schedules that they've actually had to relieve themselves in water bottles in order to meet those punishing quotas. So, you know, obviously this is very Big Brother and kind of concerning, you know, not to quote their list here, but this is very concerning. And it likely, you know, would lead to a situation where they would force all communications between employees, you know, they would separate employees out and force them to communicate through these apps and then monitor what they do. That's sort of like the 1984 big, you know, Big Brother version of it. But it is clear that they are trying to rein in the way that the employees communicate within facilities in order to keep the types of things that happened in Staten Island from being able to blossom elsewhere. And so as they roll this out, we will certainly keep an eye on this. But as we talked about before, we will obviously keep an eye on the development about the union vote in New York and in Alabama and elsewhere around the country as those pop up. But we, of course, are out of time, and so we will pick this back up next month. But thank you so much for listening to Labor Radio. I am Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Elliot Gilliland.
Have a great night.
This is KBOO Portland.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes